where my deeds and those of the people around me were ruled by passions and animal instincts. Where I found only brutality, crude selfishness and an absence of any kind of love. I lived several insignificant lives one after the other, all in a hazy, semi-animal state of consciousness, and all of them serving only to awaken my emotional life. Misery and incessant work woke and polished my dulled and feelingless nerves. Men always played a great role. Men from whose bodies the same passionate fire of physical instincts always came forth to burn me. Again and again I met the fiery eyes and the whispering voice of the spirit woven of fire whom I had first met in my third trial. And again I was forced to dance with the spirit in the cavern of sensuality and passions where people turned the sacrament of procreation into a self-seeking end in itself. And I had to dance on with the spirit until I could scarcely stand on my weary feet. I wanted to be happy and I kept on seeking love. Kept on seeking the one and only man whom I could have loved and who could have loved me, the image of my complementary half. But I found only whipped up sensuality and heartless passions that never could have satisfied me. I went on and on, seeking happiness again and again in the arms of men, trying to find the one I loved. The one with whom I could experience true love. These lives were a series of never-ending disappointments. Fate whipped and drove me onward, and my soul suffered so many blows that the fires of my tortures burned through the layer of indifference about my nerves and gradually awakened my comatose consciousness. The incessant excitement enabled me to develop my nervous system step by step and bring it upward by at least 1 degree in each of these lives. Thus through my sufferings, eternal love enabled me to purify and refine my nerves and increase their resistance again. In each of these lives, however, there was within me an incessant striving to find again those people whom I consciously sought with every drop of my blood even though I could no longer remember them. People like myself. People with whom I would feel at home. People to whom I really belonged with every fiber of my being, Tahotep, Atothis, Ima and Boga. But I didn't find them. Now and again I believed I was meeting one or the other of them. Love and memory flamed up within me, but then mists covered the clear picture, and I lost them again. Sometimes I heard a servant of God speak about a great teacher, a son of God, and I had a vague recollection of having once somewhere, somehow in the dim past been close to this high being. Having heard his teachings in living words, and within my poor benighted soul there arose a force tending to draw me away to where such high beings are at home. But these moments never lasted long, for fate always gave me another shove forward, brutal blows drove back the dawning memories, and I forgot everything again. The physical and spiritual privations I was forced to endure purified my limited senses until my nerves were again able to support the highest vibrations of unselfish love. Then, gradually, a heavenly ray of divine love began to shine through the brute passions of physical instinct. And in my next life this wonderful love banished forever the mists which had been clouding my spiritual sight. Then when I was born as a neglected servant child, I was already carrying unselfish, divine love in my heart. But now my higher brain and nerve centers had to be awakened in order for me to be able to learn to express and use spiritual abilities. Again I met the man with the fiery eyes and the well-known voice. The man who had once been the red-haired foreigner. On his own pathway through numerous lives he had gone on developing himself. I loved him. I had to love him in order to gather the last experiences of love between man and woman. In my love for him, however, I conducted only physical forces into the body and this did not represent a fall. Finally, our common fate brought us together again as beggars, and the tremendous shock of remembering prodded my still dull spirit into further activity. My spiritual eyes opened. But the shock was so great that my body collapsed and I died the same instant. In accordance with the law of heredity I was drawn, a few centuries later, to two pure people filled with love whose lives had been involved with mine for ages and ages. And once again I opened my two human eyes in this life on earth and looked at the world around me with all my previous experience. The same frequencies of vibration build up the same outward forms. And as I have, with my present spiritual constellation in this life, again reached the level of the erstwhile Pharaoh's daughter, I also resemble her outwardly. But as I have become stronger in spirit and will power, I have larger, stronger bones than I had in that previous life in Egypt. On the other hand, the shape, color and appearance, the expression, of my eyes have remained the same. When I survey my whole present life back to the time of my birth, everything is clear to me. During that previous life of mine in Egypt I was conscious of myself, and now in my reawakened state in which I am again conscious of myself, memories come alive for me from that last significant life in which my consciousness was on the same level. My last experience from that life, the experience of being imprisoned in a coffin, was my very last impression. The horror I felt then impressed itself so deeply on my soul that it was the first thing I remembered again in this life. But even much earlier, during my childhood, unconscious or semi-soft hyphen conscious memories came back to me. The terrible disappointment I experienced when I began to realize that my father was not the greatest man in the country. My conviction that my dearly beloved parents were not my true parents, such were my first semi-conscious memories of my earlier life. The blobs of fat on my soup and my incessant search for unity in my circle of friends, that was my longing for bliss in the unity of the self, as I had come to experience it in the temple. The strange body postures I practiced as a little girl at home without ever having had the opportunity to see such exercises, the postures our friend returning from the Far East called the yoga exercises, these were memories of the exercises I had practiced in the temple with Mentupta. This system of exercises was part of the secret knowledge saved by sons of God when they fled to India, where it has been guarded and preserved by great masters until our own times. The horrible dream I had again and again for many years, in which a lion was chasing me so close I could feel its hot breath on my neck. The dream that filled my childhood with fear and terror was my first memory of my last impressions of that life in Egypt. The impressions of the death I died then. And the giants, the titans, and the demigods, who with their tremendous abilities stand far above the sons of men and about whom Father, my dear Father of this present life, knows nothing because he doesn't remember, Tahotep, Atothis. Sons of God. Where are you? Where are you? And I cry out silently in my soul, the way I once learned to do in the temple before my dearly beloved and highly honored master, the high priest Tahotep, and turn my attention inward to listen for an answer. At first I suddenly find myself in dark emptiness. But I am fully conscious in this darkness and know that the searchlight of consciousness is the greatest light, and the only light capable of penetrating any darkness. And I set the light of my consciousness to work at its task with even greater concentration. Where are you, you beings to whom I belong, beings whom I resemble? Beings permeated through and through with universal love, beings who understand me. You who have never left me, who have never abandoned me, even in the time of my deepest fall, where are you? Where are you? Then in the darkness I begin to see a greenish phosphorescent light. It becomes clearer and clearer as it appears to come ever closer, and soon I see this light taking on the magnificent shape of my dear Master Tahotep. I realize that myself is now projecting itself into the little room of our forest house, in the person in which I experienced, in my vision during my initiation. The creative self which stands above all created forms. In the time of the three-dimensional world only a moment has passed. And in this moment I have seen all the phenomena which have been latent in myself as possibilities of manifestation and which have manifested themselves on the material plane, from the lowest, unconscious step of matter up to the highest step of the self manifested in matter. Tahotep still stands before me, looking at me with eyes full of heavenly love. This look, the irresistible flow of power which is this look, melts away the last remaining mists before my eyes and enables me to experience again as eternity, as timeless present, everything that exists in my present consciousness as past. I look long and deeply into the eyes of my master, into those two wells soft hyphen springs of life, and with a feeling of infinite joy I discover I understand his unspoken words. I have reacquired the ability of the spirit. We understand each other again just as we once did in Egypt. I feel like jumping up and throwing myself at his breast, but he raises his right hand and holds me back. His eyes tell me, "Don't touch me. You know I'm not in the earthly plane and you can see me only because you have adjusted your consciousness to the spiritual vibrations in which I live and move and have my being. If you wanted to touch me, you would force your consciousness down to the level of your tactile nerves, down to the level of matter, and my image would immediately disappear from your view. But from now on you will be able to direct your consciousness to the higher frequencies and find me just as you were able to do during that former projection of yourself which you call your incarnation, or your life in Egypt. I stand still and very much in control of myself because I don't want under any circumstances to lose this present state in which I can perceive Tahotep with my spiritual eye. But my soul is so full of joy I doubt whether my heart and nerves can stand the strain." Once again Tahotep raises his right hand and lets the flow of power stream into my heart. Instantly my heart begins to beat normally again, and I am able to speak with him without words. "Father of my soul, now I understand that my present life is the resultant of all my deeds in previous lives. I understand the relationships between people and events. But there are still a few unanswered questions. I know, for example, that my one and only child is Ima. And I also understand what it was he wanted to forgive me for when he was sick, feverish and delirious as a little boy. But how does he come to believe that he was once a Negro?" Through Tahotep's gaze the answer appears as a series of pictures. In Ima's soul a great tragedy occurred. The moment he noticed what had occurred between the red-haired foreigner and myself, he was terribly disappointed. Whipped onward by a burning restlessness, he ran away from the temple, into the wilds of Africa to the Negro tribes. Suddenly I see a picture, Ima as I had known him in Egypt, but now in a tropical region, surrounded by many Negroes. He radiates divine love among these primitive children of men, and they feel and instinctively understand his love, just as animals do. Ima teaches them, heals their sick, helps them in every respect, while the natives repay his love and care with childlike worship. In his utter desperation he finally takes a Negro woman to wife and allows himself to be carried away by physical love. Little by little his consciousness sinks deeper and deeper into the body, and the daily struggle for existence in the jungle draws him farther and farther into life on the human level. He dies with a consciousness directed towards human problems and human worries, and inasmuch as he had occupied himself with the dearly beloved members of his Negro tribe, identifying himself with them in his thoughts, he was reincarnated in his next life as a Negro in accordance with the law of attraction. Into this next life he brought along the same chaotic low consciousness into which he had sunk as a result of his desperation and the extent to which he had been living on the level of animal urges. Nevertheless, his intelligence radiated through his physical body, and he became a well-liked and highly respected member of his tribe. He also had a wife and children. In his incarnation as a member of this Negro tribe I can recognize him only by the look of his eyes. I see him as he goes hunting in the jungle, climbs trees to watch and wait for passing animals, then kills them and takes them home. One day when he is hunting again in the jungle, he is attacked by a tiger, struggles heroically, but finally is killed. I see his wife, alarmed by his screams and the noise of the terrible struggle, plunging into the jungle to help her husband. Then the vision pales, and I perceive only Ima's condition after his death. His incessant longing for me leads him unconsciously, in his disembodied state, nearer and nearer to me. And I have come a long way since we were together in Egypt, but so far we haven't been mature enough to be ready to find each other again. Now we finally reach the level on which we can find each other again without the danger of physical love. The will to preserve the purity of our love at all cost and in the face of any temptation, together with the law of physical heredity, caused Ima to be born as my child. In this life he must also re-acquire the clear spiritual vision he once had. And since I was immediately to blame for his having lost his faith, I have to be the one to lead him back on the path to God. But it's not yet time for this. He is still a child. Father of my soul, I ask Tahotep again, where is Atothis, your brother and my father in Egypt? I long to communicate with him again, and I'm also certain he has never abandoned me. Instantly before my spiritual eyes there appears the image of a splendid man, one who has been, in recent times, the greatest teacher and expounder of the highest, profoundest truths. I've read books published by his disciples on the basis of his lectures. In reading these books I was deeply moved because every sentence I read made me feel absolutely positive that I knew the man who had made the statement, that I was in profound communication with him, that I knew all his thoughts and that I belonged to him. I knew I would never have a chance to meet him as he had died in a far-off country when I was still a little girl. Often I gazed long and intently at the picture of this marvelous person who had possessed superhuman powers in every respect. I felt positive that somewhere, somehow I had seen his eyes before. Somewhere, somehow I had felt their heavenly gaze resting upon me. I didn't know why I often ran to him in my dreams, ran so fast my hair and my dress trailed out behind me in the wind, and why I threw myself into his arms, onto his big broad chest, crying, "Father!" exclamation mark father. For the sheer joy of seeing him again. Neither did I know, when I had wakened why I had called him father in my dream, nor why I had cried so much my pillow was wet. Tahotep smiles, "Now do you remember?" "Yes, father of my soul, now I remember. He once told me when we were at the seashore in Egypt, there'll be a time when I'll be on earth while you are not living in a body, and there will also be a time when you'll be living in a body on earth while I'm working only on the spiritual plane to do my share in the great task of spiritualization. Where is he now, father of my soul? Where is he now?" And I understand Tahotep's spiritual answer. When he was still on earth, he promised he wouldn't abandon his disciples after his death. He promised he would go on with the great work of initiating humanity in the ancient truths. You and Boga are both his, our, co-workers, even without your being conscious of it. Later you will be conscious co-workers. Boga. Is he living on earth again? Where is he? Do I already know him in this life? Have I perhaps met him without recognizing him? Wait, answers Tahotep. He is living in a far-off country where Atothis too was reincarnated. Remember he promised to come to you from the other end of the world and save you if you got into danger. He will come to you just at the right time. Danger, father? I ask, what kind of danger? Do you remember what I told you in Egypt just before your initiation? If you fall, you have to experience all your initiation dreams in reality on earth. For dreams are nothing other than realities in the non-material, vision-forming energy world of mankind. And what you call reality is also only a dream. Only a projection of the self which has been dreamed into the material plane, into the atmosphere of the earth. And all the tests you fail to pass once, or even several times, come again and again in your life so that you can again become an initiate, a useful co-worker in the great plan. An old friend will help you through the mystic door. The young priest who helped you prepare for your initiation in Egypt is again living on earth. When the time comes he will appear, to help you on your path to the goal. And how did Thistha, Atothis general, come to be my dearly beloved father in this present life of mine? It would take too long to tell you all the reasons that played a role in this end result. But here are the main ones. You know the greatest power in the human soul is longing. Wherever a person's consciousness is drawn by his longing, that's where he is reincarnated. When you were attacked by your lion back in Egypt, three people who saw the attack wanted to save you, Thistha, Boga and the lion keeper. Boga ran after you when he noticed that you had left the palace, and in desperation he ran into the court of lions to save you. At that moment Thistha was in the act of having his lion harnessed. When he saw your lion turning on you, he ran towards you to try to protect you. But the lion reached you first and felled you with a terrible blow. By the time the three men were able to free you from the lion's claws, your body was so injured that resuscitation was impossible. Thistha picked up your lacerated body in his arms and carried you into the palace while Bogar tagged along crying bitterly. Thistha was an honest, upright man who loved the Pharaoh and you faithfully and without any ulterior motives. As he was carrying your dying body in his arms, his heart was wrung with infinite pity. He carried you like a poor little child, just as if you had been his child. He felt for you as a father would feel love and pity for his own daughter. Then your last experience in that life was when you saw Thistha and ran to him seeking his help. And these feelings you both has for each other were the deepest reason for your having experienced in a later life the relationship of father and child. But along with many other incidental reasons, there is still one important reason why you became his child, for you to be able to go through the initiation again in this life you absolutely had to inherit highly developed nerve and brain centers open and accessible to spiritual revelation. If you could follow back the long chain of successive generations descended from the Thistha who once lived in Egypt, you'd see that the chain of live cells passed on from generation to generation from the man who once was Thistha, your present father, has been unbroken right down to the present. In other words, the bodies of each of Thistha's children developed from a living cell from Thistha's body, and the bodies of their children each developed from a living cell. And so it went for generation after generation until your present father's father and mother were born and once more a living, fertilized cell was available as a vehicle for the spirit that once was Thistha in order for him to be reincarnated in the same hereditary chain. There are many deeper relationships between children and parents, ones that go back to the earliest times, than the present-day scientists studying these laws have even begun to dream of. They see only the body. But over and above the physical, there are laws of heredity reaching up into higher, spiritual relationships, like attracts like. Along with all the other reasons involved, you could really only be born again as Thistha's child because your characters are so very similar. There's a very good reason why everybody notices the great similarity in character between your father and you. But you don't resemble him because you're his child. You have become his child because you are similar to him. Naturally, you also resemble him physically in build, posture, bone structure, and features of face. Forces that are similar build up shapes that are similar. If you understand the hereditary change of living cells, you also understand why your father has the same black hair and eyes he had in that life long ago in Egypt. Colors and shapes are also manifestations of the spirit. It was a distant descendant of Thistha, a seaman who traveled to countries far away from Egypt, who brought to this country the ability to hand down physically these colors and shapes. Even after centuries have passed, a long-forgotten, long-lost color or shape can come out again in the hereditary chain. That's why parents, even though both of them may be light-complexioned, can unexpectedly have a dark-haired, dark-skinned child. The spirits themselves who are born into these strangely incongruous bodies could tell how they come by such an inheritance if they were conscious. In most cases, however, they only come to understand their origin and their task in life at a much later time. And it's good that this is so, for if a child nowadays remembers its earlier life and talks about this to others, people immediately consider it mentally deranged, or at best a dreamer or liar. But you've had enough today, my child, now return to your physical consciousness. After the great shock of remembering, your nerves need complete rest in order not to become ill. Little by little the vision of Tahotep bales. For a few moments I still see the divine glance of his radiant eyes. Then he disappears from my view, and once again all is darkness around me. I turn the light of my consciousness onto the question, where am I? As if in answer to my question, white walls appear out of the darkness, then the contours of various objects. The colors and shapes become stronger and clearer, until everything is changed back and I realize I am in the little room of our forest lodge. Yes. I am in the little room of our forest lodge. That is reality. But when I was initiated in Egypt and my body lay in the stone coffin, when my consciousness experienced as dreams all the lives which were slumbering in a latent state in myself, those dreams were just as much realities for me as the present fact that I am in our little forest lodge is a complete reality for me. Who can tell me what is truth? Have I just been dreaming here, here in the forest lodge, that I once lived thousands of years ago in Egypt and was initiated there, or am I perhaps dreaming now, during my initiation in the pyramid, that I am in our little forest lodge, and is my whole life that I consider reality nothing but a chain of dream pictures in my consciousness giving me the opportunity to succeed in the face of one challenge after another? My son now, and Ima in Egypt? Which of them is reality? In the dreams I had during initiation I saw such chaotic, horrible pictures that I can't really remember right. Nevertheless, all these impossible things in my initiation dreams were complete reality. I still see pictures from these dreams now. I saw Ima as a grown-up in an Air Force uniform, then other pictures of us sitting together with a lot of other people for seemingly endless lengths of time in air raid shelters, and I remember seeing foreign soldiers as if we had been invaded. Then our house all in ruins, then other chaotic, quite senseless, impossible dreams. How horrible. Probably I dreamed all these things because the newspapers are always writing about the possibility of a Second World War. And so I try to put my thoughts in order. For a long time I sit motionless in my room until my housekeeper, a dear girl, comes in and asks, "What shall I fix you for supper?" "Nothing, thanks, Betty. I want to go straight to bed. I'm a little bit tired today," I reply. "Yes. That comes from thinking so much. You really should stop all this reading and thinking. I do hope you won't be sick, you look so pale." She pulls back the covers on my bed, says goodnight and leaves. And as I prepare for a good night's rest, I realize my master Tahotep was right when he told me in my vision that my nerves need complete rest, they really do. 42, Rukaha and the 12 pills. All that happened next came so fast that it seems like a dream in my memory. I began to pass on to the people around me the truth that I had learned from Tahotep in the temple. More and more people came to my lectures, like thirsty wanderers in the wilderness, seeking to draw living waters and to quench their thirst with the deep secrets of initiation into the divine self. From that time on my work has been the same. I stand at the beginning of an infinitely long pathway, while at the other end there stands the radiant form woven of light, the creative cosmic self, awaiting each and every traveler with open arms. I stand there and point the way to the countless sheep who seek the light and wander on side by side, slowly forward. Ever onward towards the form of light. Just the way I had seen it all in my vision in the Dolomites. Outside in the three-dimensional world my karma, which had created my character and my fate, ran onward according to the laws of time and space. I was alone with my task, without a guide from whom I might have received advice, just like everyone has to be alone who wants to develop into an independent, resourceful, reliable co-worker in the great plan. Only at rare intervals, when I had reached a great turning point in my life, did I again receive help and directions from the higher powers which guide the course of the earth. Even then I still had to solve all my problems. As the years went by, however, things happened now and again to remind me of my experiences in Egypt. Once, when I was in a far country for the first time to take part in a big international conference, I met someone I had known in Egypt. After my arrival I entered a room in which a number of the convention participants had already gathered. I was really thinking of anything else but memories from my life in Egypt, but in this room I saw a man whom I recognized instantly, and for sheer surprise my heart began to beat faster. It was Ruka. The man stood up, and although I refrained from expressing surprise by even so much as a twitch of a muscle, he showed his surprise as he looked at me. Then he bowed and introduced himself, Walt Klimke.